Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise to help us grow. My name is Gary Lafty, your host, and I am the creator and founder of Authority Accelerators, where we take tech leaders and we show them and propel them into the authority status so that they can be the ones choosing their clients rather than the ones being chosen. Now, on this particular episode, I'm extremely excited to have Bonnie Fawcett today, because today we're going to be talking about breaking the mold. We're going to be talking about how do we make seismic shifts in really an industry that doesn't like change. So this is going to be a really exciting episode. So make sure you stay tuned. So without further ado, Bonnie, it's an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here today. Why don't we start off by you giving us a little bit of an introduction about who you are and what you actually do?
Awesome. Thank you, Gary. I'm really, really excited to be here and to share my story and my journey. So I'm Bonnie Fawcett, and my company is Legacy System. And what we do is we help estate planning attorneys take home more profit, save time, precious time, of course, and bring order out of the chaos. So it's very normal for a solo or small firm estate planning attorney to be dealing with a lot of chaos, not enough time, sacrificing family time, and then not a whole lot to show for it at the end of the day in terms of take home income. And we totally flip that on its head and teach attorneys through a number of ways, including software as a key piece of that, to really decide it's my time to really make this run like a business and to make it work for them and their family.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love the fact that you said, because we see it so many times within industries, not just the tech industry, but as you said, in the law industry and other industries, they're so busy being busy that they can't actually make the good business out of it. And it's not their fault. It's because they're experts in what they do, but not necessarily in the industry of growing a business. So it's absolute great that you actually do what you do here. Let's dissect a little bit. I mean, you obviously had a thriving estate planning law practice, and then you decided to pivot and move into tech. Talk us a little bit about what was the incentive for you to do that? Because it just seems to be you were so settled in one and you went, nope, I'm going to shift this way. What was the incentive about that and your mindset behind that?
Yeah, I think it was actually quite a shock to the system for my whole family when I said, I'm not going to practice law anymore, because that's all I wanted to do growing up and all I did straight out of college and into law school and working at law firms and all that. But what ended up happening is during the years that I built my law firm here in Colorado, I was also licensed in Texas and New Mexico. So I built a law firm that focused on serving clients in person, but also serving clients fully virtually in the estate planning realm. So I was figuring out how to do both, built that practice over a couple of years. It was thriving here in Denver. But also during those years, this is 2012 to 2016, I had four kiddos. So that's a lot of change in a very short period of time. And just so you know, the way the math works there is there were twins in the middle. So a girl, two boys, and a girl. And by the time the fourth was born, I realized I was at home for a few months. Thankfully, I had added a partner by that time and could be home for maternity leave for a couple of months, and realized that the rigidity of client meetings, the commute downtown and back every day simply wasn't going to work for me to be able to show up as a mom to my children as they had needs, whether at that time they were younger, so just like sick days or that kind of thing. But I knew going into, you know, school and activities and sports and you name it, I wanted to be there. And I knew that I couldn't do that if I maintained kind of the, I wouldn't call it a big law firm because there's just a couple of us, but you know, the kind of downtown in office, nice big office law firm, I wouldn't be able to do that. What ended up happening during those years, I'm a very creative, but also systematic person. I try to balance both. And so what ended up happening is while I was doing estate planning, I just thought, how can I systematize this? I want to be able to grow. This is actually a big challenge of estate planning attorneys. I want to grow, which means you need new clients. That's where the growth comes from. But I don't want to just double my new clients and double my working hours. That's the challenge. A lot of people out there will tell attorneys, you know, we'll get you double your clients. Well, it's like, well, where are you going to find double the time? You've got to figure out how to systematize it in order to serve double without doubling your workload. So I figured out during those years, how do I stack the various tech options out there for estate planning attorneys to help run this firm? How do I write the SOPs to have kind of the humans doing the pieces of the process with software enabling, you know, that process to be faster? And as we grew, I was able to just figure that out in a way. It was almost an accidental passion. So by the time 2016 came around and I was considering, you know, how do I not be a lawyer, which was very scary, just so you know, it's a very scary moment to think that. But I finally decided, you know, well, it seems like I have kind of figured out this other thing. Let me see if I can find attorneys interested in this. So in 2017, I started finding attorneys, got a few clients, worked very closely with them, hand in hand, and I just sought opportunities. And as I was out in the world, opportunities also did come where I could, you know, add on a big group of attorneys at a time through other programs that had a concentration of attorneys as part of their roster. And so I was able to grow kind of in these spurts just through my professional network. And eventually I fully phased out of practicing law. That was my goal. It took a couple years, and I continued to work with a business partner at the time, and then fully phased out of that as well to say, you know what, I'm ready to do my thing, my brand, Legacy System, my software, which we'll talk more about where that filled in the gap. But now Legacy System is a combination of software, training and coaching, support, a drafting service on the back end for estate planning attorneys, as well as some automation building, kind of where I started. I still package that into.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that was quite a journey that you actually went through.
Yes.
You know, especially as you say, with a young family as well. And, you know, I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into that, but I'm going to just kind of put that aside for the moment because I've got so much to ask you, you know, for this particular episode. So when it comes to creating a new solution, you're obviously, you know, the law as an industry is not known for its change. By its own definition, it's set in stone because it's, you know, that is what the law is. And therefore, people who practice it generally tend to say, this is how it's done because it's always been done that way. Talk us through, how did you validate that there was a problem? Because you can see the problem, but that's no good if they can't see the problem. So talk us through how you validated that problem that made you confident your solution would take off.
That's a great question, actually, because the way that I was new to marketing, by the way, when I started my estate planning firm. So much I've learned, quote, on the job through a lot of books and podcasts and resources and conferences I would go to and that kind of thing, including marketing. But what I figured out with estate planning, I just had my first child in 2012 when I started my estate planning firm. And I just thought, let me find young moms with new babies. They need estate plans. You know, even if maybe that's not the typical crowd, you know, people tend to go for retirees or empty nesters, that kind of thing. I just thought, well, I know I need an estate plan in my position. Let me find more of me as my ideal client. So what ended up happening is I built my estate planning firm. That worked very well, by the way, to target essentially what I knew I needed and use that as my marketing content. Over time, then I became, you know, this estate planning attorney with a very busy practice and a lot going on at home, and didn't want to double my working hours, wanted to keep it sane, you know, basically in running my firm. And so what I found then is that I'm actually becoming, you know, for my next iteration of what my career looks like, which is where we are now, I'm now my ideal client. You've got a busy firm, you've got a family at home, you've got XYZ challenges, and that really resonates with my potential clients out in the world. And then of course, those who are currently part of my program and have been for a number of years now, I just told them, here's what I'm challenged with. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I can't figure out how to do. So I started working on it and I started to solve it. And I've shared that with the world, realized other people had that same challenge. And here we are, I want to share it with the world. And that's what I've packaged together. So by going through that experience of building my firm, and as I mentioned, I systematized as much as I could, I found what was just, to me, it was glaringly obvious where there was a huge opportunity in the software space. So I had dialed in automations and SOPs and workflows and checklists and you name it with technology available out on the market. But the piece that I could not dial in, no matter how hard I tried, was the interaction between attorney and client, with all the data gathering that you have to do initially, with all the additional data gathering as you talk to your clients and say, do you want a will or trust? What do you want to name your trust? Do you want a charitable gift? How do you want to leave things to your kids? Under what terms? There's hundreds, in fact, over 1,000 individual pieces of data that you either have to get from your client or they have to decide on, and you have to then capture. All of that goes into an estate plan, a number of documents. I don't want to say an estate planning document, an estate plan that consists of a number of documents. And so when you sit down to draft those documents, if you don't have all of that data organized, complete, and accurate, your drafting is like an administrative black hole. Clients make last minute changes at their signing, which is an embarrassing experience all around. And so I thought I needed to figure out how to solve this data problem. Well, sure, there's online forms, there's fillable PDFs, there's Word and Excel, there's online portals to share documents securely. So there's a way to use software to enable that workflow. But to me, the workflow in and of itself was a nightmare. It's just a mishmash of platforms, no data integrity, no data security necessarily, depending on the situation, client confusion about where they need to be. And I thought, okay, even though I've got, quote, software helping me with this, the workflow needs a revolution. We have to totally rethink how we're gathering information, having the discussion with clients, capturing decisions in real time, having clients review and approve all that in a place online, secure, where there is just one single master place for everything that the client provides or decides on. And so that's what the software is that I created, was how can we just revolutionize how we're thinking about that collaboration with the client? And it's really the only software on the market that serves both sides. It gives the attorney what they need, because there's a lot of legal technical on their side that they need to capture, but also gives the client what they need, which is an understanding of where they are in the journey, plain English, you know, instructions on what's happening, an intuitive interface and that kind of thing. So it's really rethinking that entire process that a lot of attorneys and some who may be listening at some point in this podcast think that they, quote, have figured out because they simply use software like a fillable form and a portal to facilitate this. And you're still actually going to ask,
what is the biggest misconception? Because what makes sense to us, especially when we're creating something, especially when it's solution led as opposed to project led, we think, yeah, this is an ideal solution. But what would be the biggest, because there'll be other people here, not necessarily in law, but in other niches and other realms as well, be thinking, well, I've got a solution-led package here, solution-led software, but it's about changing people's minds. It's about changing their belief systems from what they're used to doing. So what kind of misbeliefs did you have to get through, and how did you do that? For those who listen here.
That's a great question. So there is the misbelief that I'm using software now. So I actually... You might have to edit that out. My son just threw something down the stairs. So there are a lot of misbeliefs out there that are challenging for me to address. And so I really try to make sure that in all of my email content, I'm really agitating the problem and not yet focusing on the solution, because I want them to understand, like, what she's saying is true. So there's something wrong with that. So I first have to even make them problem aware. So I really try to focus that on my marketing content. But once I get them into my flow, my marketing flow, I start through various, you know, long-term nurture automations. I really start to focus on, like, problem and solution. So I got them in initially with problem awareness, and then now some solution awareness over time. But it is a challenge, because lawyers are very just used to the old way of doing things. So that is, you know, it's hard to get past. So what I've tried to do to help that is, I just recently wrote a book. It hard launches on Monday. So I'm really excited for that. I really just go into, among a lot of other things, but I really go into where there's this black hole of lost time with their current process. And so I'm able to speak to them in a way where I know what their current process is almost across the board. It can only be so different firm to firm if you're still doing it the old way. And so I capture each one of those and then lay out, you know, well, what, imagine this, kind of just like an go on this journey with me to imagine this. And I do that in my book. So the book is a really great help in that regard too. And the other thing that I've done, and because I've been a student of various coaching programs, is I really like the material to be best in class, where I'm only, once I've got that solid library of material, which I have at this point, I'm iterating that. I'm not just adding more. That's one of the challenges I've had as a student, is sometimes I'm in these coaching programs where every time I log in, there's 5 more hours of stuff to watch. And I'm like, what is that? I need to watch 100 hours before I watch the 5, and then I'm overwhelmed and that kind of thing. So I really try to keep things hyper-focused on immediately actionable steps that they can implement, including in very kind of discreet places. So that way they can see some immediate results. So I really try to focus on best in class. And I just really hone in on just, you know, Word, Excel, email attachments, handwritten notes, fillable PDFs, online forms, you name it. And once I like say that over and over and over, I've said that a million times, they really start to get like, oh, I get it. That makes sense.
It's simplicity sometimes, isn't it? You just got to relate it to, you can go too far and lose people, whereas you can just stick to what they know, the simplicity and stuff, and say, these are the hot coals you are holding. Yeah, we're not talking about new stuff here. These are the hot coals you are holding. These are the challenges you are having. Let go of them. Let me show you a way moving forward. I like the simplicity of that. But I want to now move on to something, and then congratulations on your book, because this is a great segue into the next section, which I want to talk about. It's becoming an industry authority. How important do you think it is to be seen as an authority in your industry, especially when you have a product or a service that's new to the market? And what steps have you taken? The book is a great example, but what other steps have you taken to ensure that you are climbing that authority ladder?
To me, it's almost a necessity. I can't imagine trying to grow my company, my software base, without also seeking to be an authority on what I teach and what the software solves. So the book is one way to do that. The reason is, I get this question all the time. We have a couple of what I call perceived competitors. They're perceived because I know they're not true competitors, but my client base, for the most part, thinks that they are. And so I get the common question of, how are you different from so-and-so? And so one way I can answer that, you know, with integrity, with helpfulness, even if they never spend any money on the software, I want to still help them, is hand them this book, for example, or invite them to a webinar. I've got an automated webinar going that teaches them some of the things in the book that goes back to the best in class teaching. I teach, you know, the same solid kind of library of content in different ways. So I've got it in an automated webinar format, plus with a very clear call to action to join our membership from there at the end of that webinar. So I really try to make sure that I've got free, accessible, immediately actionable resources at their fingertips for free at any time. And there's a point at which, because this is, it's all rooted in the software, eliminating a lot of this lost time, lost profit, and all that chaos, at some point they have to realize they can't implement what I teach unless they are on the software as a result. So I really try to make sure that I'm differentiating from these perceived competitors simply by way of just, here's what I can teach you and you can get it for free. And if this is for free, imagine what's on the other side of being paid, you know, on a membership that's paid.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that, because it's a topic which I talk about all the time with my clients, and it's give value first. But when I mean give value, it doesn't necessarily mean you're giving the whole store away. It is show them the what can be done, not necessarily exactly how to do it, because that's what you're getting paid to do is given the how to do it. But the what to do, making them think, that's a different way of doing it. That's what I should be doing. That is what is available to me. And that's what I can achieve. It's just painting that picture, almost that future pacing, and making sure that they can see what their future looks like. So that's a really, really good one. So that is all well and good. You're doing that. I love the fact you've got a webinar, on-demand stuff. You're giving value first, educational-based marketing. Let's talk about marketing that didn't work. Because there is a whole plethora of marketing gurus out there saying, do this, do that. That's what you should do. This is how it works. What marketing have you tried that just hasn't given you the results that you desired or you wanted, or has just turned out to be an absolute flop?
That's a really good question. I would say, you know, the marketing that hasn't worked for me, well, as you heard me say earlier, I'm very systematic. If I sit down to do one thing, I ask myself, could I do it the same way I'm about to do it 200 or 10,000 more times and still do it this way? Or can I slow down, you know, slow down to speed up? Can I slow down and kind of make sure that, like, what I'm doing now, even if it takes longer, can yield me results for years and decades to come? So to me, and this is my personal opinion, what doesn't work for me is like the quick blast, just because you need money real fast in your bank account, doing these quick blasts of just a flurry of things, because to me, you're not focused on the relationship with that person who's on the receiving end of your communications over time. And I was reading in a book, because I love reading anything I can on any of this type of stuff. I was reading just about how there was a study done where if you are constantly doing marketing, I think the numbers work out where about one out of every 14 people you get in front of through time or money or both, so some marketing investment, only one in 14 are ready today to buy what you can, you know, to pay for the problem you can solve, and they'll pay you, one in 14. But if you stay in front of those other 13 for at least 2 years, the research shows that eventually half of them spend money to solve the problem that you can help them solve. Now, if you're not still in front of them in 2 years, you were, because you had a flurry 2 years ago because you needed money like quickly at the time, which, by the way, that financial desperation also speaks through your marketing. You have to be really careful about, you know, there's the unwritten kind of nonverbal that everyone can pick up on. But if you don't stay in front of them over 2 years' time, those six or seven other people that you did get in front of won't go to you. They'll go to someone else who can solve their problem. So the idea of building into your system, like, you're going to build your list, you're going to keep track, you're going to stay in front of them, was really important to me. So what didn't work are these spurts and not paying attention to the people that you did have the privilege of being in front of, just because they weren't ready to buy today. They're not on your timetable, they're on theirs. So serve them where they are and stay in front of them over time. So for that reason, for the most part, I don't like email newsletters, for example, that are like in the moment, like today, do this. I like the long-term nurture over time. So if I'm going to sit down and write a marketing email, I focus on what new email can I put at the end of that marketing nurture that everyone's going to get once they get through, you know, that point in the process, whether they join my list today or in 2 years, versus let me sit down and write an email broadcast to my whole current list. So that's my favorite marketing approach. And part of it was just like, I'm a checklist person. I like to do's, but and every Wednesday, let me sit down and do this. And I just couldn't do it every Wednesday, you know, consistently. And so I'd get down on myself and I'm like, I'm tired of that. I just want to be able to add an email and get it into my marketing machine and feel good about that versus feeling like I'm behind.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's some key words there. There's so much there that you gave us that I just need to unpack a few more because, unpack it for those who are listening because you did. You just came at it with so much passion and things. So I just want to dial it back a little bit. I think one of the key things there that you said over and over again was consistency. You know, you've got to have consistency. And you're absolutely right. There's this tendency within marketing to spray and pray and then just get that message out because something new's happened. It's like a squirrel. We've got to announce this. And they announce it. And then it's done. And there's no follow-up. There's no consistency to follow that up. And then you're never at the front of mind. And as you quite rightly said, and I want to bring it back to what you said earlier for those who didn't listen, there's only ever 1%, between 1% and 3% of people who are ready to buy. So every 100 people you speak to, there's only ever going to be between 1% and 3% who are ready to buy. 97% are not going to be anywhere near there. And you mentioned it earlier. Then sometimes they're not even problem aware, let alone solution aware. And if they're not even solution aware, they're not even, you are the solution provider aware. So trying to push that down somebody is really important. I'm so glad you brought that up because it's something that tends to be missed by a lot of people within tech because they just believe this build it and they will come mentality. You know, this is so great. My baby is fantastic and they will come, this field of dreams mentality. So I love what you said there. But it also now leads me into something else. So I know when we've had these chats before and off camera, we were talking about rebuilding from the ground up. You had to pivot from outsourcing at one stage when you were doing your outsourcing and to now building an in-house tech team. You even had to go and learn how to code to do this. What were your biggest takeaways about that from going from outsourcing to building an in-house team to having to go to, was it evening school that you went to learn coding?
Yes.
On top of everything else. Let's talk about that and what were those biggest takeaways you had?
Yeah, that was quite the journey. That's like some, I might write a book about that, about just that experience. So at first I outsourced and it was a great referral. I had a friend who built some photography software with an outsourced company, partly based here and partly based in Croatia. And they had, she ended up selling that. And that was a very great experience for her. So I was like, oh, that's a perfect company. I have this software idea. Let me hire them. And I did. But I think, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, inspect what you expect, basically. And also there are parts of me, I just didn't even know. I didn't go seek out, and it was that was my own shortcoming, but I didn't seek out what I should be inspecting of them. I had a lot of trust in them, but also, I mean, part of it is, you know, you live and you learn. So it's not like I regret that. I was dealing with a lot of stuff at the time. I sold my half of the law firm. I went through a divorce since then. I had to still run my busy practice while trying to develop software. And there's a lot that goes into it and just communicating your ideas and getting it onto paper. And so I had a lot of trust in that company and didn't really make sure that they were delivering exactly what they needed to deliver. And then over time, the CEO, who was the owner at the time, passed the torch to another CEO who really ran the company into the ground. And I figured that out. But when we launched the first version, I figured out within a couple months that there's something wrong here. I can just feel it. But I didn't know what to do. I'd never tried to transition to another development shop. I didn't even know how to log into anything. And so I saw some writing on the wall and didn't quite know what to do. So I had a little bit of a moment of panic. At the end of 2022, by the way, I just got pregnant with my fifth baby, who's now almost 2 years old. And so I have him coming in May, and then we just launched and I've got some issues. So I didn't really know what to do. And I'm a hands-on person. So I thought, I don't know what to do. Let me just learn how to code. Maybe I'm going to have to run this thing myself. I'm not recommending that's like everyone in this position. That's your next step. But it was for me, just given my personality. So I signed up for a coding bootcamp and I did do it 3 nights a week on Zoom, sitting upstairs in my dining room with my kids all around me. And for as full 6 months, I had committed to doing that bootcamp. Well, halfway through that 6 months, I got the call that my outsourced company, who I had a very close relationship with the developers because I traveled over there twice. So that was a good call. I did take the time and money to travel to Croatia over 2 years' time. And made great relationships directly with the developers working on the software. So that was good. That ended up in my favor because they helped me get access to things I didn't really know what to get access to as their company was shutting down. So about halfway through the bootcamp is when I got noticed that the company was going to be shutting down like right now. And that meant nobody could be in there managing bugs. And nobody touched our code for about 6 weeks, which is you lose a lot of sleep over that situation. But I did successfully transition to another outsourcing shop. But I talked to the professor of the bootcamp, explained my situation. And he's like, well, that's very interesting. I've never had a student come in and you're with the problem you have. So over time, I created a great relationship with him, with the teaching assistant, and with really who came to be the star student of our boot camp. And over time, I told my husband, I was like, I'm praying about this. I know that this is the future of the company. I'm going to have all three of them as my in-house dev team. Now, that took about a year's time, but in July of that year, I hired the star student. In October, I hired the teaching assistant. And then in March, I hired the professor. So now it's like the trifecta, in my opinion, but I just stayed focused. I eliminated the distractions. Like, that's where you will absolutely just fall under the weight of it all. And I just stayed forward focused of like, I know that lawyers will grow and this will save them so much time and it needs to be better. We've got to rewrite the whole code base, which we did. And now we've launched it. But I just knew like the end game is going to work and it's a journey to get there. And I'm going to enjoy the journey, even if it's challenging, and do what I can with the right people around me along the way. And so now I have an in-house dev team, which is amazing, but it was a little scary there for a while.
I bet it was. What a story that is. And yeah. You know, things is, everyone seems to think that the entrepreneurial journey from the outside, entrepreneurial journey is you start, you finish, and you just climb this eternal ladder and then boom, success. But we all know it is twists and turns and squiggly lines, and it never goes in the direction we want it to go. You know, so that's a classic example of that.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to now talk about is, you mentioned it earlier before, so I'd like to go back to it because I think it's a really important thing of educational-based marketing.
Mm-hmm.
You focus heavily on educating your ICPs, in your case, attorneys and whatnot, rather than just selling to them. How has this approach helped your growth? There's education-based marketing, founder marketing, is not something which is known within the tech industry. It's almost like a demo after demo after demo, then you buy, right? Explain how educational-based marketing, educating your ICPs, has helped you grow within your company?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I even did educational-based marketing to find estate planning clients. So I just, I just moved. Okay, that worked there. Let me figure out how to make it work here. So I offer, as I mentioned, a number of free resources that really help someone understand not just what the software does to help them, but how they can dial in immediate, action steps to save time. And that's really important to me. I want to help you, even if you don't ever, subscribe to our software. But even on the other side of being a paid subscriber, what I learned, and this just came through experience. So my initial kind of marketing was only to my professional network. And so that's who started using my software. Well, as they started using it, they would ask me questions. Well, how do you make sure the client, wants to fill out the initial intake in your software? And how do you, make sure they pay you on time? And how do you, get your drafting done quickly? And all this stuff that was beyond the software, but the software facilitates if they know kind of these other pieces that go just beyond software and what they see on a screen and what they can type. And so on the other side of paid membership is everything I still teach for free, but it's hands-on with me through templates and resources, like things that they can take and immediately it aligns with what I teach, and they can immediately, brand it to themselves and use it in their own practice. And there are also pieces there on the other side of, being part of a subscriber where you get access to myself and my team's support is a key piece of that as well. And then we have services that also supplement. If you're using the software, we can help you draft, because we can draft so efficiently, which is affordable to you and takes 3 or 5 hours off your plate per client, plus some automation building as well to facilitate the client communication journey. But the idea of education-based starts at the beginning and even weaves all the way through their entire journey with us over time. I never find myself not educating my leads or clients in some way almost every single day. And if I see a gap in anywhere in my materials that person's asking about, I go and fill that gap because I want it to be such a solid foundation. I just don't see how with the prevalence of so many software options, and again, kind of that perceived competitor challenge, to help people understand the difference, I don't see how I could just hand someone my software, an estate planning attorney, and expect them to leverage it in the most valuable and time-saving way possible if I'm not also teaching them alongside their use of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just being by their side, because people, right from the very beginning, we all know that sometimes we have to teach them what they need to look out for. Then we have to teach them how to buy it. Then we have to teach them how to use it, and then teach them how to get the best out of it. So they become advocates of ours rather than just users of ours. So I think education, like you said, weaving that education throughout, not just at the very beginning, but throughout the relationship is vitally important.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about 5 years' time, the future. Let's go into the future now. Where do you see the legal tech industry in 5 years' time? We started our podcast by saying they don't move very fast. In fact, if they do move, it's really, really slowly. We've talked throughout the podcast of changes that have been made and that they're beginning to see the light. Where do you see tech in the law industry in, let's say, the next 5 years?
That's a good question, because I think about, well, where has it come in the last 5 years? You know, separate from the legacy app, my software, there's a lot of software in the last 5 years that has come up to help attorneys. But all that software, from what I can tell, I mean, with very few exceptions, is focused on what I call the general practitioner. So given what I've seen in the last 5 years in terms of where the next 5 years are headed, I just see more of just kind of like, we'll help you do a lot of things okay, but nothing really, really well. I mean, I don't mean to be negative about the future of legal tech, but as long as legal tech is focused on the general practitioner, and there is a group of people like that where that might be ideal for them, but for someone who really, like I mentioned at the beginning and what my book is about, take home more profit, save precious time, bring order out of the chaos, meaning you need to focus on one practice area and get extremely proficient and competent there. And then you have the time with your family and the profit and order as a result. You have to be in a niche. There is no question. So even though general legal software will kind of continue, in my opinion, to go on that path of let's just add more features that are okay, but doesn't really help you save so much time, maybe it helps you save your assistant some time, but as the service provider, you're probably not saving a whole lot of time. That's not really where I want to go. I don't want something to just be software enabled. I want it to be really like where software changes the game for you and the trajectory of your career and your family and your financial future. So I would hope that there's going to be more in certain practice areas that are approaching it in the way I am with estate planning. But again, like I mentioned, I've eliminated all outside distractions. Like estate planning is all I eat and breathe and sleep and can talk about in my sleep, you know? So maybe there's others in other practice areas trying to solve the same thing. You know, I hope that there is, because there are opportunities in bankruptcy and immigration and so many other areas. But that's the thing where sometimes we have attorneys join us and they're like, well, how do I do probate? Probate's different than estate planning. Probate's on the back end. After somebody dies, what do we do? Which is different than the upfront planning. How do I do trust admin? How do I do bankruptcy or immigrate? They've asked me that. I'm like, you don't. You don't. We're highly focused here. So I hope that that's where it is headed.
Yeah, but I think so too. As you said, that the opportunities are there. I think if people are more open to it, they sit. I think, like everything else, they need to be seen to be convinced. And once they see one sector of the market taking hold of it, then the next one moves and the next one moves. And that's when you get those adopters. I think we're still in the early adoption stage, yes. I think, of tech within the law industry. My final question to you, Bonnie, I mean, because this has been absolutely great. So here's my final question for you. It's a little bit of a loaded question because we have talked so much today on so many various things. If someone had just fast forward to the very end of this interview, if you had to distill everything that we've talked about today and all the insights you've shared and summarize it, what would be that one piece of advice that you want to be giving out there today?
Slow and steady wins the race. That is my one piece of advice. You know, because there are so many times I could have thrown in the towel. I could have thrown in the towel when the outsource development shop said, you know, we're shutting down. I could have thrown in the towel when I saw that it was going to be hard to make payroll. And there were multiple paydays in a row where it was hard to make payroll. I could have said, you know what, it's not worth it. And there's so many other examples over the last, you know, I could have gone through a divorce and just said, you know what, I'm not going to fight hard for my idea being my own, which was an actual real life situation I went through. I could have just said it's too hard, but I stuck with it because I know the end game is truly revolutionizing the estate planning experience for both attorneys and clients. And there's nothing else that does it. And I just thought, if I don't do it, who's going to? So I had to stay in it. I have stayed in it, but there are moments when I just have to remember the tortoise wins in the end. I've read the book. I know that that's the end of the day. And so I keep learning. I keep committing. I keep making ends meet. I keep looking at every problem as a potential. What is the potential out of this? You know, what can I learn? And that's taken a long time to hone in that skill. But I was actually just listening to a podcast the other day where that was a topic as part of a larger discussion. And I thought, golly, I've been there. That so speaks to me. So look for the potential out of every problem and just know at the end of the day, just show up every day, eliminate the distractions, and slow and steady wins the race.
Well, that's a brilliant piece of advice to end this episode on. Thank you very much, Bonnie. Now, if people want to get hold of you to learn more about what you do or your work or become a client, what's the best way getting hold of you?
Yes, thank you. And it's been a pleasure to be on. So you can find me at legacysystem.com. That's all about the estate planning attorney side of things. I also have bonniefawcett.com, which is just more about me, my family, and just ways I help entrepreneur parents in general. But the software, legacysystem.com.
Brilliant. And are you on LinkedIn?
Yes. You can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all those.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure I'll put some of these links in the show notes for you so they can just click into it. So again, Bonnie, thank you very much for your time and sharing your insights and expertise. There's been so much you've unpacked for us today. It's been an absolute honor to have you.
Thank you, Gary. Delighted to be here.
Great. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us as well. And as per usual, if you've learned some stuff out of today, pick 1, 2, 10 bits of nuggets from Bonnie today, make sure that you comment and you like and put them out there. But more importantly, please make sure you share this. This is for all of us to grow as entrepreneurs within our own industries, our own niches. And the more we can share insights from leaders such as Bonnie, the more we can all grow together. So until the next episode, all of you take care, keep pushing forward, and we'll see you all soon. Goodbye. Bye-bye.